This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Japan and the United States joined forces to criticize China's coercion and aggression in Asia, as senior ministers from both countries held their first in-person talk since President Joe Biden took office in January. Aside from the sharp rhetoric aimed at Beijing, the meeting Tuesday in Tokyo and a planned stop next in Seoul are as much an effort by the Biden administration to reassure worried allies in Asia after occasionally confrontational dealings with the Trump administration. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, after holding the so-called 2+2 security talks with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and their Japanese counterparts, said democracy and human rights are being challenged, and the United States will push with its partners for a free and open Indo-Pacific. Russian President Vladimir Putin authorized influence operations to help Donald Trump in last November's presidential election. That is according to declassified intelligence assessments that found broad efforts by the Kremlin and Iran to shape the outcome of the race. But ultimately, no evidence that any foreign actor changed votes or otherwise disrupted the voting process. The report was released Tuesday from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence and represents the most detailed assessment of the array of foreign threats to the 2020 election. These included efforts by Iran to undermine confidence in the vote. This is as well as harming Trump's reelection prospects, as well as Moscow operations that used Trump's allies to smear Joe Biden, the eventual winner. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Shootings at two massage parlors in Atlanta and one in the suburbs left 8 people dead, many of them women of Asian descent, according to authorities Tuesday. A 21-year-old man was taken into custody in southwest Georgia hours later after a manhunt. Atlanta Police Chief Rodney Bryant said 3 people were killed at a spa northeast Atlanta, while a 4th person was killed at another spa across the street. He said all 4 victims were female, and it appears that they may be Asian. A surge of migrants on the southwest border has the Biden administration on the defensive, with the head of Homeland Security acknowledging the depth of the problem Tuesday, but insisting it's under control and saying he will not revive a Trump-era practice of immediately expelling teens and children. The number of migrants being stopped at the U.S.-Mexico border has been rising since last April, and the administration is still rapidly expelling most single adults and families under a public health order issued by President Donald Trump at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. But it is allowing teens and children to stay, at least temporarily, and they have been coming in ever larger numbers. More than 4,000 migrant children were being held by the Border Patrol as of Sunday, including at least 3,000 in custody, longer than the 72-hour limit set by a court order. At least 2 people protesting last month's military coup were reportedly shot and killed by Myanmar security forces Tuesday after a morning of peaceful marches. Security forces have killed scores of the countrymen in recent days, and the UN has put the death toll at 149 since the February 1st coup that toppled Aung San Suu Kyi's elected government. The Independent Assistance Association for Political Prisoners said 183 people have been killed since the coup. Violence was reported Tuesday in the biggest city, Yangon, where the casualties have been the highest. Police fired rubber bullets in several neighborhoods, and one man was reportedly killed. Another killed was reported in Kowloon City in the northwestern region. Britain's new foreign and defense policy priorities show how the country will relearn the art of competing against states with opposing values, according to Prime Minister Boris Johnson, unveiling his government's so-called integrated review. In the wake of Britain's departure from the European Union, Johnson said the government wanted to strengthen its ties with countries in the Indo-Pacific region. Over the next 4 years, the government plans for Britain to also invest at least £6.6 billion of defense spending in advance and next-generation research. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 17. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's opposition leader Bobi Wine demands the release of his supporters.
They might abuse the law now, but we want to go on record having done the right thing. So it is not in vain that we are going to these offices, because everything is being recorded and we want to tick every box.
Kenya motorists complain about new fuel price hike. UN appeals for $1.7 billion to feed millions in South Sudan. Cameroon says hundreds of COVID-19 deaths result from fake and cheap alcohol intake. We'll speak with an expert about Gambia's Truth Commission, and the UN unveils a $1 billion appeal for victims of armed conflict in Nigeria.
We have three major goals. The first is to make sure we save lives and to protect people who are in need of protection. The second one is you need to make sure that we have access to services such as water and sanitation.
And ahead of the rainy season, residents of one of Liberia's largest slums are concerned about sea erosion. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's opposition leader, Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobi Wine, has petitioned the army demanding the release of supporters of his National Unity Platform Party. Wine says he wants the army to release hundreds of his supporters that he says are detained in various army facilities across the country. But Colonel Dio Akiki, the deputy army spokesperson, says the time for electioneering is over and that Bobi Wine should stop politicking. Reporter Mugumi Davis-Rakariji has more from Kampala.
For the second day running, former presidential candidate Robert Chagulanyi was arrested Tuesday and escorted back to his home in Magele, a Kampala suburb. Bobi Wine had earlier addressed reporters at his party offices, vowing to continue to demand the release of his supporters.
They might abuse the law now, but we want to go on record having done the right thing, having reached every step. So it is not in vain that we are, you know, going to these offices, because everything is being recorded and we want to tick every box, ladies and gentlemen.
On Monday, Bobi Wine was arrested along with other National Platform leaders and supporters as he demonstrated against what he called the illegal detention of his supporters. Last month, Bobi Wine's party issued a list of over 400 people that it says were abducted by security organs, contrary to the government's claim of only 177. NUP's petition to the army was delivered by party spokesperson Joel Senyun, who said that some of their supporters had been tortured and brutalized while in detention. Senyun says the army and other security agencies should release NUP supporters and pay them civil damages as compensation for the time lost and other liabilities.
They torture these people to try and extract information out of them. Which information? They have, you know, they have no idea about anything anyway. And so they have blacked out nails of some of them. You have seen them at some of our press conferences. There's a young man whose eye was gouged out. Others have torture marks all over them. And so they are brutalized and ill-treated. We have made the point severally that, look, if you think anybody has committed an offense, arrest them as the law says, not abducting them, and then take them through the process of the law.
Colonel Deo Akiki, deputy spokesperson for the Uganda People's Defense Forces, says the army is just carrying out its role.
And everyone must know that human rights or rights of an individual are not absolute. The rights have some obligations that come with them. We have a country to keep safe. We have a country to keep secure. So if one person commits an offense or does something that puts the security of this country into disrepute, we shall definitely go for him as a joint security task force that was formed to make sure that the elections are secure, the elections are safe, there is security in this country.
The Electoral Commission declared President Yoweri Museveni the winner of a by election, but Bobi Wine claims that he won the elections and has demanded an independent audit into the elections.
General Museveni came out and said that the NUP and myself rigged elections using the police. And he said we carried out a lot of ballot stuffing. Now that is clear, conceding that the election was not free and fair.
Yesterday, Tuesday, Uganda's High Court dismissed several human rights violation claims, including torture made by 49 jailed supporters of the opposition National Unity Platform, citing lack of evidence. The court said the NUP supporters did not have enough evidence to support their claim of torture against the state. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
The United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, Alan Nudehu, has released an urgent appeal for $1.7 billion to help 6.6 million people facing food insecurity. Winnie Sirino reports from Juba.
The UN released its South Sudan Humanitarian Response Plan for 2021 Tuesday with an urgent appeal for $1.7 billion to combat growing food insecurity and other threats. The UN's humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, Alain Nodeho, said the funds were needed to help 6.6 million people by the end of the year.
We have three major goals. The first is to make sure we save lives and to protect people who are in need of protection. The second one is you need to make sure that we have access to services such as water and sanitation and health so people do not really become sick from other diseases. And the third is, as I said, we have to start to look at how we help the people to try to recover from what they were with investment in livelihood going forward.
Nudeho noted South Sudan, Africa's youngest country and one of its poorest, has been struggling with communal conflicts, the added challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, and frequent flooding.
In addition to the COVID-19, you'll recall that 2020 was the year of another massive flooding that the country has experienced, displacing about a million people in 2020. And that was in addition to the flooding that the country has faced in 2019. We're barely recovering from that when the second flooding started. And third, you will recall that the intercommunal conflicts also have basically spiraled a little bit out of control during the year 2020.
Nudeho said they would prepare for the coming rainy season by fixing dikes and roads and moving emergency supplies into places to avoid being cut off by floods. He said South Sudan's government needed to prioritize security to make sure that people who need assistance can receive it. Nudeho said if humanitarian agencies don't get the funding in a timely manner, their remaining resources may soon be depleted. Separately, the UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, on Tuesday appealed for $1.2 billion to support 2.2 million South Sudanese refugees living in camps in neighboring countries. Winnie Sirino for VOA News, Juba.
The United Nations is appealing for $1 billion to help 6.4 million of Nigeria's most vulnerable people, including 2 million who are being forced to flee their homes because of armed conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The bulk of the money will be used to provide life-saving assistance to millions of people in Nigeria's northeastern states of Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe. The insurgency by the militant group Boko Haram, which began in 2009, has expanded to include other armed groups. Jens Laerke is spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says the brutality and suffering inflicted upon millions in that area of ceaseless conflict shows little sign of relief. He says people are hanging on by a thread and are in desperate need of help.
Over 5 million people there are at risk of acute hunger during the upcoming lean season. That's the worst outlook in 4 years. And that's due to escalating conflict, displacement, and the disruption of livelihoods, which is made worse by the effects and restrictions of COVID-19.
The lean season, the period between harvests when food stocks are at their lowest, lasts from May to August. Famine has not been declared in any part of the country. However, the World Food Program reports suffering has reached emergency levels in parts of northeastern Nigeria. WFP spokesman Thompson Theory warns armed conflict in the region is preventing people from growing food, leading to a potential hunger catastrophe. He says there has been significant cropland reduction in over 90% of the region over the past decade because people have fled their homes and abandoned their land.
Millions of people are already facing dangerous levels of hunger as their lives and livelihoods are being severely disrupted by non-state armed groups who are vying with each other and fighting against government forces for control of territory.
Orta says the largest amount of money from the appeal, $354 million, will be spent on food. Other priorities, it says, include nutrition, water and sanitation, hygiene and protection. Money also will be used for livelihood programs to help people get back on their feet. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 17. Kenyans are decrying the latest increase in fuel prices. The latest increment, the third in 3 months, raises the price of a liter of petrol by about 7%. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, the prices have been on an upward trajectory since December last year, impacting the already high cost of living.
The Energy and Petroleum Regulatory Authority has once again revised fuel prices upwards for the third month in a row. In December last year, the price of a liter of petrol was about $1. Now it is retailing at $1.22. Many Kenyans are concerned the increase will not only affect transport cost, but also prices of basic commodities. The commercial transport sector has been significantly affected because at the moment its drivers are only carrying 60% of their previous capacity due to COVID-19 social distancing measures. John Kimani is a public transport driver, locally known as Matatus. He says they're already recording a decline in revenue because of the hike in fuel prices and that they might be forced to increase passenger fares.
See now, things are already harder there. First, the corona. We were forced to reduce the number of passengers to 60%. Now again, the fuel prices have gone up. Now we're wondering whether we should increase the fare or to leave it as it is. And we are also worried because everyone is complaining. The economy is not doing so well. It's tough on everyone. But anyway, as it is, we'll have to think of ways of how we can survive, because we have to survive.
Another motorist, Innocent Achoka, who is an Uber taxi driver in Nairobi, reiterates. He says his profit has been affected because his daily spend on fuel has increased from $10 to $13.
The fluctuation of prices of petrol has really affected me as a driver. My daily earnings have been reduced because now I have to add some more or chip into petrol. Like now, I used to spend like 1,000 shillings for petrol throughout my day. But now due to the increase of prices, now I had to add like 300 on top of the money I've been using normally. Now this affects me directly like a driver. So I would urge the government to look into this, especially when you consider like our operations of taxis around the city. The prices are very low.
However, the government attributes the increase in fuel prices to a rise in crude oil price and also fluctuation in the exchange rates. Government spokesperson Sarah Soguna told a news conference yesterday, Tuesday, that the fuel prices are justified because the government needs taxes to run the country, including paying civil servants.
When you give out your sovereignty to the government to protect you, you must also accept that you'll be able to pay your taxes to the government for it to manage all these things. But I can tell you this, the amount of taxes those people in Europe pay is nothing compared to what you're paying here. Nothing. So we are crying when we shouldn't be crying. Actually, we should be standing firm and say that this is our government. We will support it. That's all I'm asking of each and every one of us.
Manufacturers have warned of an imminent increase in the cost of goods, a move that will be tough on most Kenyans who are still healing from the harsh economic effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Testimonies at Gambia's Truth Commission this month implicated then-President Yahya Jammeh in the execution of 59 West African migrants in 2005. As counsel for Human Rights Watch and an expert on the Gambia Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission, Reed Brody tells Ricky Schreier that the family members of the victims want those responsible, including most likely former President Yahya Jammeh, to face prosecution.
Witnesses told the Truth Commission, and these witnesses include policemen, soldiers, former government ministers, the assassins themselves. This testimony shows that about 60 West African migrants from 9 countries were trying to get to Europe, and they were beached in the Gambia. They were all arrested. They were held in the custody at the naval headquarters of all of the Gambian service chiefs, the head of the police, the army, the navy, the national intelligence, the national guard. And then they were taken out. First, a group of eight was taken out and killed. And then another group of 40 or 45 were actually driven from the capital an hour and a half into Senegal. And they were assassinated and buried in wells in the Casamance region of Senegal.
How important has the testimony of the sole survivor of this group, Mr. Martin Kiere, from Ghana, been to the bringing to light more details of this crime?
Well, Martin Kiere is really the hero of this story because not only did he jump out of a moving truck before his colleagues were assassinated, and he went through the forest and made it to a police post in Senegal, but he was the one who first began to tell the story. Not only that, he went around in Ghana to locate from village to village to try to locate the family members of those who were killed. And so the whole story is the story that he told. Of course, what we're learning now is what happened on the other side, who carried this out, how these massacres happened.
That was Reid Brody, counsel for Human Rights Watch. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Spain. Authorities in Cameroon said the coronavirus pandemic has led to a spike in excessive drinking and in deaths from thick alcohol. Consumer groups protested, saying authorities need to do more to crack down on counterfeit alcohol and medicine. Moki Edwin Kizeka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of people came out on Monday to watch the seizure of what authorities allege are fake whiskies from Elik Ezua Market in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Officials of the Cameroon's Ministry of Trade, Customs and the police were cracking down on fake alcohol to mark World Consumer Rights Day. Pauline Biloua is member of the Cameroon National Consumers Council, the government's consumer protection body. She says thousands of fake alcoholic drinks have been seized from at least 200 shops and 350 bars across Cameroon within the past month.
Depuis que le COVID-19 a commencé au Cameroun, beaucoup de gens sont devenus pauvres.
She says since the first cases of COVID-19 were reported in Cameroon in March 2020, many people have lost their jobs and are now extremely poor. Consumers who can no longer afford to buy good quality whiskies now purchase fake locally brewed alcoholic drinks, which are dangerous to health, she says. Many people have developed liver problems and died from consuming fake whiskies, she added. Meanwhile, several dozen people took part in a protest Tuesday against the sale of fake and counterfeit goods. Delo Majlene Kamsi Kamgen is president of Cameroon's National Consumers League. He says he organized the protest because the government is still not doing enough to protect consumers.
Les consommateurs achètent ce qu'ils voient et ce qui est moins cher. Donc, du coup, ils consomment.
He says poverty caused by the coronavirus is pushing most Cameroonians to go out for cheap products. Kamgen says, unfortunately for consumers, the government has allowed fake and counterfeit products, including medicines and whiskies, that are highly consumed in Cameroon to be sold publicly. He says all that a consumer organization like his can do is to educate and sensitize people on the risk civilians are exposed to when they consume goods of doubtful origin. Cameroon's Medical Council says about 3/4 of the 7,500 deaths from liver problems in Cameroon in 2020 were due to the consumption of fake alcohol. The police said some products are made from pure ethanol or with alcohol, bought or stolen from pharmacies and hospitals. Fake drugs are another problem. The government said about 380 people died of fake drugs in Cameroon in 2020, up from 223 in 2019. The government said the true numbers are probably higher because fewer than 30% of civilians visit hospitals. Some buy roadside drugs and others prefer African traditional medicine. Trade Minister Luke Magwambarga Atangana says he has ordered a crackdown on all the fake drugs and alcohol. He says he has ordered investigations on the origin of all fake drugs and whiskies circulating in Cameroon. He says he has asked the police to immediately seize all fake goods in the market. He says customs officers have been asked to protect the border so that fake goods should not be smuggled into Cameroon. Atangana said Cameroonians should report people suspected of producing or selling fake goods to the nearest police station. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
According to the World Bank, coastal erosion threatens thousands of kilometers of coastline from Mauritania to Gabon in West Africa, home of about 105 million people. Those coastal areas generated 56% of the region's gross domestic product. Ahead of the rainy season and the risk of high sea, residents of one of Liberia's biggest slums, West Point, say they fear being displaced from rising sea level. Rita Jolabwe reports from Monrovia.
West Point, located on a 0.53 kilometer square peninsula, which juts out into the Atlantic Ocean, is one of the most densely populated slums of the Liberian capital, Monrovia. As Liberia's rainy season approaches, usually in mid-April, and the threat of high sea looms, West Point residents are crying out for help from their government and the international community. Munantia, a 52-year-old and mother of 12, says sea erosion over the years has dislodged her family. She and her children are currently sheltering in a neighbor's house. Now Muna says she fears that her neighbor's home might also be taken away if authorities do not build a coastal defense before the rainy season starts.
The city, all the horses, what were you for? They take half of the roads there, and some we not get nothing. We ain't get money to bail, we ain't get money to rent, and we get plenty of family. So we're begging the government to come help us before the rainy season starts.
Jacob Jimmy, another resident, says sea erosion is an age-old problem for West Point. He says people often lose their lives at night during sea erosion. Still, Jacob says residents continue to live there as a result of poverty.
The erosion bend is stepping up. So many years, care our horses, care even human beings, we lose life, we lose property. But now we are asking government, we are asking NGO, we are asking all people in the world to help at least to black the water for us. If they're able to locate us somewhere that will be comfortable for us, it will be fun. Because rainy season is about to come. Now we are in worry. We don't have money to go out to do renting.
A party trader in West Point, Vito Sar, says relocating out of the area would put him out of business. He says he prefers the building of a coastal defense to relocation.
Probably now we are renting because we're doing business. We can't able to move from here. You know, when the government came, they said they want to cruise the place from here all the way over there. The baron themselves were having here, they put break it down. Send them break that baron down. We can see, you know, and for.
John Jala, the compliance and enforcement manager at the Liberia Environmental Protection Agency, says West Point residents are to blame for their current situation. However, Jala says there are plans to build a coastal defense or relocate inhabitants of the area. But he says donors are yet to release funding for the project.
But the issue of the West Point, there's supposed to be a specific amount that's supposed to also come to be able to help to build the coastal defense in West Point. But to access that funding mechanism, there are a whole lot of procedures and processes that are involved.
Environmental degradation has gradually caused a part of West Point to erode into the Atlantic Ocean. Analysts say other endemic problems associated with this community of more than 75,000 residents include overpopulation and diseases such as tuberculosis. Rita Jobwe for VOA News, Liberia.
And that's it for this Wednesday, March 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good day.